And welcome everybody to episode 48 of Digesting Cinema with Aaron and Christina. I'm your host, Aaron, and as always, I'm here with my fellow host, Christina. And this week, anytime we have a guest on, they're very, very special, but you'll probably hear a little extra pep in my step today, I'll be honest. It's always weird to say, but I'm going to say it anyways, even though I said it when a hero of mine, serious idol in this, and a reason that this podcast exists for better or for worse, known for his fantastic Salt Cat Soap Company, which if you're not following that, at Salt Cat Soap, as well as the critically acclaimed network, home of the podcast that did help inspire this and critically acclaimed with William Bibbiani himself here. How you doing, Will?
Hi. Yeah, that's a hell of an intro. I don't know if I've ever been introduced that way. So thank you. That's a real honor. And yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm just happy to be here, honestly. So thank you for having me on.
The movie we're doing this week, it is one of William Bibbiani's favorite films, I've learned, which is very, very interesting little tidbit there. And we're going to learn much more about why he made this selection. It is the 1993 Steven Zaillian directed film In Searching for Bobby Fischer. And our category this week was a biopic about someone you've never heard of. That is where we're going to kind of take it from here. But before we kind of jump in, I just want to kind of talk to you about why this was a selection that you made the comment. We reached out on Twitter. I believe Christina made the tweet. And then this was one that definitely intrigued us when we saw it.
Well, yeah. And of course, I follow Christina voraciously on Twitter. Yeah. And it sounds weird when you put it like that. I regret that. But I like the prompt. I actually really, really liked the premise of this, because I feel like so often, you know, like, oh, it's a biopic about Queen. And I'm like, you probably know about Queen. Like, but there's so many interesting people whose lives don't get the big biopic treatment. And one of my favorites happens to be my very favorite movie, Searching for Bobby Fischer. It is about a young chess prodigy named Max Waitzkin. I'm sorry, Josh Waitzkin. I mixed up the actor's name. It's played by Max Pomerang.
Yeah, any of our listeners know I switch up names maybe throughout the episode, so totally, no worries.
I've never gotten a trivia question right. I do this all the time. So it's about a young boy named Josh Waitzkin, real kid, and turns out he's a chess prodigy, and took to it like a duck to water, just absolutely understood the game inside and out as a competition, as an art form. And it's a story about him and his father, played by the incredible Joe Mantegna, who I feel never quite got the acclaim that he deserved, as a dad who supports his son and then supports him so much he almost ruins his son's life. And that's a very distinct story that you just don't see a lot. I really connected to this when I saw this as a kid. If your parents have high standards for you in one way or another, it could be about your grades, could be about sports, could be about your art, whatever, there becomes this weird sort of ironic give and take in the relationship where it's built very positive, but eventually the pressure starts to mount and it can become a negative thing if you're not very, very careful. And I think this is one of the best films about that kind of parental relationship. I love the way that this movie turns chess, a game, if you want to call it that, that I think most people go, oh, it's a fun way to spend the time, or oh, it's not for me, or whatever. And I think it understands that to the people who are really great at it, it's a kind of magic. I think James Horner's score just turns into something truly triumphant. I think that in the end of the day, when we finally have a competition between Josh Waitzkin and Jonathan Poe, his nemesis, if you will, I think this turns into one of the great sports movies, because I think that last chess battle is as exciting as any climactic sports game I've ever seen in a movie. This is just a movie that I think has everything. I think all the performances are wonderful. I think the writing is wonderful. I think it's exhilarating in a way you're probably not expecting if you just think chess movie. And it's one of the few movies where I honestly don't have a critique. Like, there's nothing in it where I'm like, okay, yeah, but this one performance isn't great, or the pacing's a little off here. No, I just think literally everything about this movie works. And after a while, as a critic, you get asked a lot, like, what's your favorite movie? And most critics I know have like a list, like, depending on the day, it's between these five or six or whatever. After a while, I realize it's just this. It's just this movie that gives me everything I could possibly need from a film. Excitement, tragedy, I laugh, I cry. It's just got everything for me. And I love introducing it to people. I wish it were more famous. I wish it were better known. But the good thing is that people get to kind of discover it in a very clean way. It's not one of those movies where the scenes have been kind of ruined from being parodied a lot, like on Saturday Night Live or Family Guy or something like that. If you watch it for the first time, there's a really good chance you're literally watching it for the first time and you haven't had all this stuff ruined for you yet. So I don't know. I'm just excited to see what you thought of it, because that's what I love most, is talking to other people about this film.
Yeah, that is an amazing answer there. First of all, it just brings us back to our Digesting the Force days. Christina had never seen a Star Wars movie before this started, to where when the crawl's happening at the beginning, she said, is there always these words at the beginning of the movies?
Yeah, it's exciting.
And we'd always ask why people love Star Wars. And each week we had people from Thomas Harper to PJ and just others just talk about why they loved it. It was so moving and inspiring. And just, this is why we started this podcast here, is the same type of reasons. So we didn't want to just talk about the same old movies every single week that, you know, if you do a search on whatever, Spotify or YouTube, wherever it is, you're seeing these over and over again. Searching Bobby Fischer is the type of movie we want to know, people's true favorite movies, not what you're supposed to say.
Before I go into the movie, I did know that it was about chess. So I guess, Bibbs, I will ask you, do you know how to play chess? Are you any good at chess?
I do know how to play chess. I've always enjoyed chess. I've never really had other people to play chess with. Not because of this, like, I'm so good, no one will play with me. I'm okay. But I never got to get good because I never really knew anyone who was, like, really excited to play it. So I like chess a lot. I think it's a great game. I think it's a great mental exercise. Teaches you to think multiple moves ahead of any given situation. I think that's a skill set that goes beyond chess. But I'm not, like, spectacular at chess, nor do I get to play it very often, unfortunately.
Aaron, do you know how to play chess? Are you any good?
My brother was in chess club, so therefore I hated chess growing up. So no, not a chess player. I'm a poker player. So, one of my favorite sports movies is Rounders. And I don't think you'd have to know anything about poker to love Rounders. And definitely with this, there's like moments of chess terminology, but it's not just like, I don't know anything about chess. And like the last scene and throughout the movie, I'm thrilled by the chess scene with Vinny. We'll talk about it later, but God, I love Vinny in this movie. He's my favorite character.
Well, I'm not great at chess, guys. Just so you know, I'm terrible at it. I know all the rules. And then when I used to tutor a long time ago, I had a student that was great at chess and he really tried. He like would read the books and be like, Miss Christina, you have to castle here. And I'm like, bro, I don't know what that means. I'm like, I'm just moving something. Like, I really don't think you should make that move. Like, I'm just trying to help you out. Like, I'm going to win in like five moves. I'm like, how do you know that? So I am not a chess player. So watching this, like for me, it blows my mind to just see how other people's mind works. And, you know, there's an important part of this movie where you have to think into the future. And I'm just like, how do you know all of that stuff? So that one's a little mind blowing for me when people play chess, that they can make all these moves, keep the strategy and like think forward like that. Do you want me to do the synopsis real quick, Aaron, and then we can jump right in?
Yeah, let's go ahead. And by the way, we do rate the synopsis as well, William. So just be ready to rate the synopsis. Yes. It's also out of 5 stars, half stars are allowed for the synopsis. Christina, go ahead and give us our IMDb synopsis. I'm always hesitant.
And someone
on
them, I swear, the people have not watched the movie when they write
this. What I like is every once in a while, it's usually not in the big movies, but every once in a while, you'll see one where the summary has a little editorial.
Yes, that happened last week.
It said boy meets girl and it's a bunch of crap. And I'm like, IMDb, really?
Yeah, it said like lovable oaf and like several other details last week where I'm like, you're making a lot of assumptions on a character I wasn't even that big of a fan of. So what we got this week?
A prepubescent chess prodigy refuses to harden himself in order to become a champion like the famous but unlikable Bobby Fischer.
Oh, I'll give my rating first. Usually we let our guests go first. I'm going to let our guests go second or third here.
That's fine.
I'm going to give this a 2 out of 5 stars. And just because, you know, it's a little oversimplifying the movie to just make it. They're just trying to make him another Bobby Fischer. Although that was a big thematic point of the movie in several instances. I just don't like making it so much that even the synopsis has to do so much with Bobby Fischer. He already has a title. Let the synopsis go to Josh or Max, as William called him.
All right, William, how would you like to rate the synopsis?
I'm a little mixed. On one hand, that's a tidy synopsis that is accurate to the movie. it is, of course, leaving out a ton of context and plot. And, you know, if you're going to simplify this movie down to one sentence, that's okay. I would have maybe added something about being torn between different mentor figures. I think that's just as important. Yeah. But it's more or less accurate. The trick with this movie is this isn't like a high concept movie where it's like, oh, there are zombies on a plane. Boom, done. That's all we need. I don't need anything more from your movie. That's the plot of the movie, Flight of the Living Dead. But here, there's a lot more like nuance going on, and you're never going to get it all in one sentence. So that's okay. I guess I know some people are genuinely surprised that this isn't a biopic of Bobby Fischer, who is a very, very famous jazz prodigy. So I guess explaining that the title is a reference to Bobby Fischer without actually making the film about Bobby Fischer makes some sense. So I'll be a little kinder. I'll give it a 3. I think it does fine.
Yeah, I'm thinking like 2.5. Yeah, I even feel like we didn't even get too much where like he refuses to harden himself. He was 7. He's just trying to like figure out what he wants to do with the game. And
I also would have massively preferred 7-year-old chess prodigy, prepubescent chess prodigy. Yeah, it's just a taste thing.
That's also like a big age range. 7 is a young kid.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
A young kid who's completely inexperienced and doesn't know a lot about the world and has no control over his relationship with his parents. And yeah, that's a different thing. And so like it's more specific. I agree with you. Better.
Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, maybe we've got a career in IMDb synopsis after this, Christina. but we'll see. That does give us an average of a 2.5 out of 5 for the IMDb. That's about where we range with it's most of these IMDb. That's what you get with most. We have had very few go to.
Have
the
you ever had a 5? Like one where it's like, my God, the poetry.
Did we have a 5?
I went back and wrote this summary of the Flintstones and Viva Vegas. Like you just nailed it.
I can't remember off the top of my head. There was definitely some that we thought were like, wow, that was pretty like spot on, and that felt like it covered it. Maybe
I want to know what the top end of that
it was.
What's our top expectation? You know, it's like when someone says, you know, like, oh, did you not like Red Notice? Well, you know, you can't walk into every movie expecting Citizen Kane. When I just want to be like, oh, you didn't like the IMDb summary for Searching Bobby Fischer? Well, they can't all be as good as the IMDb summary for Chill Factor, you know?
Yeah, Chill Factor coming up on episode 50, of course,
only
but
a matter of time,
yeah, exactly. But Christina, where do you kind of want to start with this one? We kind of will start at the beginning of, I think, how he became, like, realized he kind of loved chess.
Go ahead. I will start by saying that I definitely thought this movie was going to be about someone named Bobby Fischer, especially how it opens, where you hear a little boy talking about Bobby Fischer. And I'm like, okay, we're going to watch Bobby Fischer as a kid. And this is what his accolades are going to be. Because I try to go in as blind as possible. I did not read about our prepubescent chess prodigy in the IMDb synopsis before watching. I just knew that chess was involved. Yeah, so like that part, I was like, oh, so it's not about this. We're looking for some kid named Josh. So I guess we're not talking about Bobby anymore. But yeah, you're introduced to a young kid who's playing and just, you know, has his little sister and has two parents. I mean, you're just establishing that this is just a fairly normal family relationship. And then, you know, you watch him just get enthralled watching these guys play chess, but in a way that it kind of looks like he understands what's going on more than just kids that are just watching adults do something. He seemed to really like grasp the concepts and follow what was happening in the game. And, you know, it's not like he ever played before, not that we know of.
Yeah, I really loved the kind of intro at Washington Square Park, I believe it was. And it just, for me right away, it was just nice to see such a diverse way of him learning the game of chess. And because most of the time, my very limited familiarity with chess, it would be like Chess Club or from a classic, like, you know, just a classic chess game that was shown on like the local, I don't know, channels early on. And like with this, like, I just figured he was like, watch Bobby Fischer highlights or something. And then he's like, I want to be Bobby Fischer. And then, no, I don't want to be Bobby Fischer. And I mean, it was refreshing to see just different types of people playing chess in ways that, for me, I follow a lot of this through playing poker, being a poker player. And often people will read poker books or there's a certain way to play poker. But at the end of the day, I've always liked to play poker, how I play poker and just how I've learned. It was just, I feel like an important thing for Josh from the beginning is that he was seeing something that intrigued him and made sense to him logically, but he could see a way of expressing himself through it, which was always the most important part for him.
Yeah, like he's a quiet kid, you know, he's a nice kid. He doesn't seem particularly you know, he doesn't seem like he's dealing with any serious issues at the start of it, but he's quiet. He doesn't show a lot of passion for things. And even when he becomes passionate about chess, it's just the chess thing. He doesn't even really even talk about it that much. He doesn't, like, his dad is surprised to find out he even knows how to play.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love those.
He's in the park. He's always playing in the park. He sees people play. He picks it up kind of organically. Mm-hmm. He shows some aptitude for it. And immediately, and you see that it allows him to connect to, like, adults really fast. Like, Lawrence Fishburne sees him play one match and he says, like, that kid knows how to play chess.
Right.
And they never go into specific detail, but the implication is that Lawrence Fishburne's character probably deals drugs.
Like, oh, they show drugs being dealt at the park. Joan Allen sees the drug and she's like, we're leaving now.
See,
like,
Lawrence Fishburne do it too directly, but, like, he's probably not, under normal circumstances, the best role model for a kid. Mm-hmm. But he sees the potential in this kid when nobody else does. And Josh is able to reach out to someone who was willing to connect to him on that level. And it leads to this great scene where Joan Allen has to, like, kind of prove to Joe Mantegna that their kid knows how to play chess. And the scene where they play chess and Josh lets his dad win. And dad's like, I guess he doesn't know how to play chess. And Joan Allen's like, you won't hurt his feelings if you beat your dad, sweetie. And Josh is like, really? Yeah, go on ahead. And then it's just this wonderful montage of the chess game taking all day as his dad is, like, constantly, like, deciding what move to go. And he realizes that somehow his 7-year-old has lapped him. Mm-hmm. At something. Yeah. And the magical thing about it is his ego isn't hurt by this. Mm-hmm. He's all in.
Yeah.
And at this point, at least, I think you really love Joe Mantegna because, yeah, he's a bit slow on the uptake, but he really cares about his son a lot. And, you know, he works in sports. He understands mm-hmm. the need to, like, nurture talent. And yeah, it's just such a nice organic way of this thing sort of progressing from plot point to plot point. It doesn't feel like I have this ham-fisted inciting incident and we're all going to mm-hmm. like give a couple of monologues about where we're from and then get there. It's all incredibly fluid.
Yeah. I loved that he didn't even win his first match in the park because, you know, you're like, okay, this kid's a prodigy. He's just going to blow this guy out of the water. He showed potential. He mm-hmm. didn't beat his dad, but there was it seems like it's a throwaway line, but his dad's like, well, I gave him every opportunity to win, which means he's so good that he didn't take the bait every time and lost on purpose. Like,
yeah.
So he showed his aptitude and his potential by essentially throwing the game.
And it's really important, that bit too, because it shows that in the end, as much as Josh loves chess, he cares about people more.
Yeah.
It's shown really over and over again throughout the movie too.
He doesn't want to win if it hurts someone's feelings. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't, there's no fun in that for him. And then it gets to this point where if he ever loses, he worries it's going to hurt his dad's feelings because his dad holds him such a high standard. And now he's trapped and he's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't. And mm-hmm. that's a harrowing place for a kid to be under any circumstance. And it's here in this chess tournament of all things.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, all of these are classic kind of sports moments. It's like if the kid at the basketball court and, like, someone, you know, saw the little kid playing and it's like, that kid's got skill. He gets on there. He gets completely embarrassed. It's how you get up from those punches. And oh my God, the father relationship in this movie hit me to my absolute core. And I'm glad I didn't see this when I was younger. For anybody who doesn't know, I lost my father at a very young age. I was about 3 years old. He had a brain tumor. And so a lot of times, you know, movies like Lion King, traumatic for me as a kid, I couldn't watch until I was like literally like 18 or 19. I was like, that's the movie where the dad dies on screen. And with this movie, I just don't think I would have been emotionally mature enough for a lot of my life to kind of get the father relationship. And I think I would have just been like, I don't understand what's going on here. My mom was extremely kind of the other way, where it was just like, there was not this pressure to, like, win with things or like an expectation to win. And like, when I'd fail, it was like, we were talking about earlier, where it's like, where your parent wants something so much for you, it can be too bad. Or if the pressure's too high, it can have the opposite effect. It's with my mom, it was like she was too passive and it almost had the opposite effect for me, where it was like, oh, sometimes I need you to kind of expect a little bit. But either way, the father relationship, I just really love how it's shown right away where he's losing on purpose. And, you know, it's shown a couple of times to just show his mastery and, you know, using his skills for good, which is just like kind of amazing and unheard of. It's like, no, you have to hold, you know, his coach says later, Ben Kingsley with hair. I'm sorry, I'm missing his name, but Ben Kingsley with hair was bizarre to see. Like, I was like, that looks like Ben King. That is Ben Kingsley. Oh my God. It is So just be ready for that if you haven't watched this movie. But he like talks about it at one point. It's like, you have to have contempt for your opponent at all points to be great. And Josh is like, I don't want to have contempt for my opponent. Like, I don't want
to hate them.
Right.
Yeah, there's this toxic quality to a lot of athletics and sports coaching. Mm-hmm. Not all of it. But a lot of it is about treating your opponent as your enemy, or a lot of it is about insulting someone so that they'll want to fight harder to prove you wrong and prove they can do this many pull-ups or get that six-pack abs or whatever. And some people I know actually want that. I don't understand that personally. And this is something that when I was in school and I was like encouraged to play sports and things, always left me feeling very alienated and very lonely. Whenever I tried to do any group activity like that, because that was the general tactic almost all of the gym teachers and sports coaches that I had growing up. And that's one of the reasons why I ended up gravitating more towards theater and film, is because, I mean, there's toxicity there too, but usually when like you're acting out a scene from Romeo and Juliet, you know, the drama teacher isn't just like, no, you're never gonna be a good Romeo, you're the worst Romeo ever, like you have to have contempt for Juliet. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Just trying to tell a good story here. And I feel like that's something that connected with me when I was young as well, is the idea of competition is nice and you can be competitive without losing your decency or without giving in to this idea that it's you against the world. You can be positive. And this is something that I didn't used to compete a lot. Then I entered like the movie Trivia Schmodown, and initially I tried to be like this heel and I was like, yeah, come get me, whatever. Never felt right. And it's only when I started went to this Searching for Bobby Fischer place where it's just like, I will be very competitive and I'll take it very, very seriously, but we're cool. Like, there's, yeah. I don't see any reason for the weird antagonism. It certainly doesn't help me play. So
that's really fascinating to hear.
I think it's about something that I just don't see that a lot. There aren't, I think, enough sports movies which are about the toxicity of coaching. Like offhand, Varsity Blues kind of deals with that with the John Voight character. That's an underrated movie, I feel. But yeah, I feel like that's not talked about enough. And I think Searching for Bobby Fischer nails it.
Yeah, because when we get introduced to Ben Kingsley, he's like, it kind of almost seems like he was holding this like underground chess club, but it was more legit than it looked. And apparently there was a chess column in the New York Times back in the 90s. I don't know if that's still a thing, but yeah, so like takes him on. But now we have this dual mentor relationship. And this is where I kind of like, as the teacher, I'm not a real big fan of when coaches and teachers are like, this is my way and this is how it needs to be done. And you need to figure it out this way, especially when you have kids. He clearly has gut instincts that he's using in the park. And then he has strategy here. And I didn't like at first with Ben Kingsley's character, with Bruce's character, that he wasn't willing to let him hone into his instincts. It was always, this is the way you have to do it. And this is how Bobby Fischer did it. And I helped Bobby Fischer and I know what I'm doing and you just need to listen to me. And I'm like, that's not how you coach somebody.
And again, especially a little kid.
Right.
His personality isn't even solidified yet. So every single thing that you do and every single thing that you try to teach them and instill upon them as a value can be really confusing, and it can take hold and it can take root and it can take you, trust me, I know, many years of therapy to deal with stuff like that. So it's not easy.
Like telling him he could have points to becoming a master chess player and then tell him that it was all bullshit anyway.
Oh my God, that scene, when I first saw that scene as a kid, that killed me, where he's just like, yes, this is a thing and only the greatest chess players in the world. And he does this wonderful little trick too, when like he shows him initially and he's very careful with the paper, and when Josh hands him the paper back, he like adjusts the corner a little bit, like, you kind of sullied it, I'll fix that and put that away. And then just boom, copy after copy. And the thing that is messed up is, if you really think about it, Bruce knew this moment would come and he had the photocopies in there.
Yep.
Ready for this moment, ready for the dramatic reveal that I've lied to you and that you should be thankful for that.
Because even with the mentor relationship, there needed to be contempt.
Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly. He wants to have this, that whole bit, and they come back to it. And on one hand, it's a great dramatic teaching move. On the other hand, the way he does it is borderline abuse, is where he's like, what's the right chess move here? And then he can't see it. And then finally, he just violently knocks all the chess pieces across the room. And he says, if you're a good chess player, you know where they were. And that's something that is going to imprint on a kid. Maybe not in a good way, though.
Right.
It's really important. And then his dad is trying to like be his chess coach coach too, even though he doesn't know anything about chess. So he's just trying to facilitate all this stuff. And his dad is doing everything except being a dad. And that's the one thing he needs from him. Except for, I will say this, I think aside from the final chess game, my favorite scene in this movie is when Joe Mantegna and Joan Allen are at Josh's school. And the teacher, played by a very young Laura Linney, like just pops in for one scene, and she's great in it. And she's talking about how, you know, he's playing chess and that's really, really great, but he's also away from school a lot and he's not really forming connections with his classmates. And that's a really big part of what school is all about. And you're kind of missing this. And Joe Mantegna sees her just sort of side-eye chess. She calls it this chess thing. And he goes off on a speech that if my dad ever gave this speech about me, I would be like in tears the rest of my life. Talking about how my son is better at this than I will ever be at anything. Better at this than you will ever be at anything. And you have to respect it. And he's right. And it's a good speech. And it is the wrong time for it. And that's the beauty of that scene. It's perfect, but it's the wrong... This is not the moment to defend chess at all costs. This is the moment to defend your son and to listen to other people when they want good things for your son. And it's so heartbreaking, but also so sweet.
Yeah, so as a teacher, I can weigh in on this.
Please do.
Well, I watched this the second time I watched it. I watched it with my husband and I looked at him and I said, if you ever spoke our child, who doesn't exist, but our future children's teacher like this, I would, I would be more embarrassed ever. Like, I would just not tell people I knew you. Like, I couldn't even imagine, and I would not appreciate as a teacher being spoken to like this, because I understand, you know, these kids come in with their big sports dreams and their parents tell me all about it and they're on travel this and they're on travel that. And, you know, I get it in this case that he truly was the once in a lifetime kid that truly was the best. But like, I'm also telling you that like, they can't read and they can't do their multiplication facts, or they sit alone in the corner and they don't talk to anybody. And that is also very important. And
that's your responsibility.
Right.
Your responsibility. Isn't their chess career, your responsibility isn't their sports career, right? And that's what he doesn't get. And so he's very supportive, good, but not now. Right. You have to be a dad.
Yeah, I think there's just probably moments with any parent where they have this child with gifts greater than they ever have, where they have to have that moment where they are like, am I vicariously living through my kid here? And I like how it's just not said out loud here, but it's shown in this movie. Like,
there's this great moment where Joan Allen is just desperately trying to like stand up for her son's emotional well-being. You know, I wanted to play chess, he likes chess, but like, I mostly care about him as a person. And she's trying to connect to Joe Mantegna, because again, he grew up in sports. We don't talk a lot about it, but it's his job. It's all over like their apartment and everything. And there's that great bit where she says, how many ball players have this relationship with their dad? And he says, all of them. And you realize he just like, oh shit, that's completely been normalized. And that's probably how he grew up on some level. Probably had a dad who pushed him too hard too. And
this
a cycle that he's in.
Exactly. And that was another moment where I realized why I wasn't great at sports growing up, why I never really wanted to stand in the batter's box and risk getting hit by a baseball. Once I got hit once, I was like, I didn't have that drive to like, because it was just, no, exactly. It was just my mom in the stands. Like, I didn't have the dad who I wasn't trying to disappoint. I just had my mom who was just like, you picked up the bat. Like, anything I would do was amazing to my mom, including deciding to quit sports. Like, it's like, good for you, Aaron. You quit, like, good. Like, so when I saw that, I was like, no wonder I never had this drive to be the best baseball player ever. Like, I wasn't afraid of disappointing my parent like that. And just like how much pressure that would put on a kid of any age and how that would keep going through your life if it's not addressed, and why so many.
Dangerous.
Right.
Dangerous is what it is. And you see it as well. And like when they start going to like the little kid chess competitions and we start seeing all of the parents.
Yeah.
And every single one of them, even if they only have one line, they're a complete character. And I love them. You get Dan Hedaya as like the judge who has seen it all before and has no patience for any of this crap. And then you have the wonderful William H. Macy before he was famous.
Amazing. Yeah. This is such a good cameo.
He's the dad of Josh's like soon to be best friend. And he's just like, he's so nervous. He's just like, yeah, so if your kid wins his match and my kid wins his match, they'll be playing each other. But it's cool. It's cool. It's fine. It doesn't matter. It's okay. Everything's fine. You want a tuna fish sandwich? I'm going to get a tuna fish sandwich. I'm going to get you a tuna fish sandwich. Oh, my God.
It was like Dance Moms, but chess dads. Like, it was just like so. I love seeing parents like in these kind of scenarios. And I just feel like Yeah, there's everybody's so great in their roles. And that's like one of the things I really have to say about this movie as a whole is there's not a lot of throwaway side characters, no matter how much they're in the movie. They're really fleshed out.
I will like three lines in this movie.
And yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's not just because, oh, it's Tony Shalhoub, but because he's actually like kind of funny. And like, he like, you know, he pushes his luck with asking for extra gummy bears, you know, kind of a dick move, but you know, Josh let him get away with it.
Yeah. Even the kid actors are in this movie are all like, I think really just well-developed kid actors in the decade where a lot of kid actors were not so great. So.
Hello. Morgan was played by the kid that goes on to star in The Indian in the Cupboard, which is a great movie.
Also, that is a good movie, actually. I like that movie. Although there's something very confusing in that movie.
I haven't seen it in quite some time, but well, as a kid, I thought it was so magical.
Did you ever read the books that The Indian in the Cupboard is based on? Because there's a series of books.
No, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. I read the books before the movie came out. There was like three or four of them. But the idea is that the books clarified that when you put like a toy in the cupboard and you turn the key and you open the cupboard again, it's replaced by a person from history, like a real person taken from history and is now inside this cupboard, but smaller. So if you put a cowboy in there, it'd be an actual cowboy from the past who gets transported to the future. And then in the movie, there's this cool scene where he like puts all of his toys in there. And now Darth Vader and RoboCop are in there. And it's like, those aren't real people. You would get like David Prowse in the costume. You wouldn't get an actual Darth Vader with a lightsaber. And I was very lucky to interview Frank Oz, who directed that movie. And I asked him that question. I was like, so how does that work where like you just get a Darth Vader even that's supposed to be for history? And Frank Oz was very diplomatic about it. He was basically like, so it's a movie and we thought it would be fun.
That's a good point. Good point by Frank. Frank, if you're listening, great point. Great rebuttal there.
Frank, too. We know you're watching. We know you're a fan. Come on the show.
Yeah, appreciate it. We'll digest any Frank Oz film you'd like. But yeah, no, that is a throwback. I have not seen Indian in Cupboard in 25 years, I'll say. So yeah,
we do have a five or more word title coming up. Just saying.
All right, in the back of the we're good.
You go for the longest title you can possibly get.
Yeah,
I like it. I like
the Englishman who went up a hill but came down a mountain.
Oh yeah, there we go. We'll add that to the list.
It's actually a very good movie.
I don't believe Christina has seen it either. I'm going to venture out and say. Christina, where do you want to kind of go from here? Christina keeps this show on the rails. God bless Christina.
I will say I'm going to go back to the teacher relationship here because that's all I can relate to. So I'm going to focus in on the conversation that Bruce has with Josh's parents where he's talking about his training and he's saying, you know, I'm having a difficult time because you guys keep letting him play in the park and it's just a very, very different kind of way to play. And the dad's like, absolutely, like he's done playing. And the mom's like, no, but like he loves doing this. So like, basically, Bruce, like, figure out how to work with it. And I'm kind of torn because when I grew up, I danced. So taking ballet and taking hip hop are very not the same thing. So if you're going to take a hip hop class, you're basically unlearning all of the technique that you would need for ballet. So you kind of either have to decide to not do one or realize that you're never going to be super great at both because they're kind of the opposite of what they were. And they're not something that can intertwine. But then also like from my teacher point of view, I'm going, okay, this is what I have to work with. It's my job to adjust my teaching for this kid, see what he brings to the table and work with it and see how I can still implement what I want to implement using what he knows. So interested to see if you guys even picked up on that.
I think there's a lot going on in that scene. I'm you're totally with it. And Bruce says, well, it just makes my job so much harder. And she says, then your job is harder,
right?
Like, it's not our job, you're working for us here. Like, it's not our job to make your life easier. And I think, you know, this is really at the heart of it is there's all of these adults, specifically Bruce and Josh's dad, who want Josh to be one way. And that's what a lot of parenting is for some people, is trying to make sure my child turns out the way I want them to turn out because I think that's best for them, or maybe it just makes me feel better as a person if you're being selfish about it. But what they're not really doing is listening to the child who actually has some say in this. And again, this is a very specific situation where the child is a prodigy, and it's not about just trying to teach them enough of this thing to help them pass a class. It's about teaching them the best way to communicate. And for people to communicate, whether you're doing it through writing or music or dance or chess, you need to know what you want to say.
Right.
And I think what's going on is Lawrence Fishburne's character is teaching him about the human connection in chess more than anything else. As you're playing the man, you're not playing the board. Mm-hmm. Whereas what Bruce excels at is strategy and theory. And these are things that can complement each other, but Bruce can't see that.
Right.
He's never seen Vinny's philosophy work. And that's one of the best things about that climactic chess game is that we see tangibly that Josh has not only learned from both of them, but he has managed to find a way to combine those two different ways of thinking and add his own way of thinking when he offers Cameron Poe a draw.
Right.
And I think that's the thing is, personally, this is for me, and this is me as a child, and both of my parents were teachers, so I've seen a lot, but I think sometimes we don't give kids enough credit for being able to adapt and to absorb a lot of different information simultaneously. We need teachers, we need to guide them. But I think if you try to teach a child multiple disciplines, they can possibly find connections in those disciplines that they might not otherwise have. I remember even when I was like in college and I was going to film school and I still had to take, I have to take a few more science classes in order to get all of my prereqs and that kind of thing. And what I realized is that the more in-depth you learn about it, the more connections you really can make between anything you're truly passionate about and anything else in the world, because that becomes your filter. So I think it's a story about people just trying to figure out what to do with this kid, and the kid's trying to tell them, this is what I want to do, and no one's really listening.
Mm-hmm. This part is probably going to be the sad part of the movie. Can we talk about all the talks that Josh has with his dad that I thought I just wanted to reach through my screen and hug Josh when he loses and his dad just reams into him about losing in 7 moves, and Josh just looks at him and just like, well, maybe I'm not good enough. And I'm just like, oh my God, just hug your child and tell him it's okay if he loses.
That's the thing. That's what he wants. He just wants to know it's okay. That was him testing his dad to see, is it okay if I lose? And dad in that moment said, no.
Yeah.
You will lose, maybe not my love. I'll probably love you, but you will lose my affection. And here's the thing, Josh, you can see it in his body language. He's all hunched over. And there's that line, why are you so far away from me?
Yeah.
When he realizes that his dad's, because what he's losing here, maybe isn't his dad's love, but he's losing safety.
Yeah.
He no longer feels secure around his dad, psychologically or even physically, because his dad's keeping his physical distance because he's repulsed by what happened to his son. That scene is a killer.
Yeah, that's that one's so sad. I just feel like I get it. And, you know, I'm around kids all the time and I get what it's like to be frustrated by them, especially when I see a kid that I know is better and they just didn't work that day. And you're kind of like, well, you know, like, what are you doing? Like, I know you're better. Like, I know you are. You've proven it to me. Like, I know. But like, he already felt bad. It's not like he blew it off. It would be totally different if it was some teenage kid that was like, whatever, dad, I just lost a chess match. And then like, okay, you lay into him. But this kid already felt bad. He's 7 and he already felt bad. And that was your moment to make him feel bad. Better and to make him feel like he could do it again. Because I think at that point he got afraid.
I think Bruce does this the most, and I think his dad falls into the trap of it, where they're not asking why is Josh doing things.
Right.
They just want the results. Results will mean that they're a good mentor or they're a good father. If Josh wins all these chess matches, then I did good teaching him chess, or I did good inspiring him to succeed in competition. And when he loses, they're like, well, what did I do wrong with you? How have I failed you? What happened here? Because I put in all the work and none of it's showing off right now. And when a child doesn't meet what someone might see as their potential, when a child who has a lot of talent in something slips up or anything like that, there's often a reason for it that goes beyond talent.
Right.
Children are emotional beings and they're just absorbing everything we give them, every single thing. And the more duress and the more like trauma, you know, extreme or even extended subtle trauma changes the way their brain chemistry works. Because if you're used to feeling fight or flight, like I have to win constantly, your brain is releasing chemicals that actually like encourage that level of antagonism or interaction, and then your brain just going to want to always do that. It's a really dangerous time to like not give a kid the freedom to lose once in a while and not to like hug them and tell them it's okay.
Right.
And so he pulls himself back, thank God. But there's a genuine period in this film where Joe Mantegna, who started off meaning so well, becomes emotionally abusive. And it's sad.
Right. Because he could have delivered the lines. He could have said the same things. But, you know, I don't think that you're not good enough. Like, you know, I think you are good enough. And, you know, in the tone that you're saying, it totally changes that whole scene mm-hmm. of even though you're saying the same words, yelling at the kid saying, I know you're better than this, and calmly telling them, I think you are better than this is, you know, you're saying the same words, but it's a totally different way. And it's a totally different way your kid's going to respond. And they feel that support from you. I mean, there was no support given by the dad in that scene. And that was just, I'm like, the kid's seven. And he just wants his dad to hug him and tell him that it's okay. It's not going to be the end of the world. And you're making him feel like it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's just like a pressure to result oriented kind of ways of thinking where it's, you're not focusing on the why, like what was mentioned earlier, just, you know, that you're going to lose a lot in life. You have to learn to lose. It's a basic ingredient in life. You lose more than you win. And that's not me trying to sound sappy. It's just a fact of life. And
it's part so hard to learn sometimes too, because we're such a win oriented just culture.
Because so many, I think we're imprinted from 5, 6, 7 years old to win, 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 win. You know, it's like, we put the Little League World Series on ESPN and we criticize these kids at the end, like the end of these nights, these 12-year-old kids. We're like, oh my God, he missed that fly ball. What are you doing? Like,
I don't understand it. I've never understood that. That's ridiculous.
It's a bunch of screwed up imprinted 5-year-olds who become adults who have to now take out their brain trauma on other people.
Not everything is a damn gladiator arena. You know, like it can just
like movie trivia, like movie trivia.
Well, I mean, like we're entering in that as adults. I feel like, you know, if you choose to do this for fun, you can do that. If you choose to take it seriously, you can do that. But again, I think the way because children don't always have a lot to say about, think about how many kids you've known, maybe even you, certainly me, we're like forced to participate in an activity because our parents said, you got to do something after school.
Right.
You got to do something, some kind of extracurricular activity. I don't care what it is. You want to do baseball, you want to act, you want to whatever, you got to do something. And on one hand, yeah, you want your kid to pursue other interests and learn more, and maybe they'll find the thing that they really love and they're really good at. But like, you know, making it like do or die is really unpleasant for everybody.
And it's, you know, what are we getting out of it? Even kids with their grades. Well, I have to get the A. I'm like, you have to understand what I'm teaching you. That's what you have to do. I don't care what the score is, because I can give you an A. You want the A? Here's the A. There you go. There's your A. But you don't know it.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of things with parents too. Like they just need to pass. Yeah. No, they need to know it and they don't know it.
That's the thing. And that's something that we really, really have screwed up in this country with our standardized testing and how much emphasis we put on it.
Yep.
Because it doesn't matter if so many people are like taught, and I think we're finally moving away from this, but like when I was growing up, so many people were being taught how to pass the SAT, not how to understand grammar or math or vocabulary well enough that you could pass the SAT. Right. It was all about here are the tricks to getting the SAT right. I'm like, when you're done taking the SAT, you're out on your own and you need to know how to think.
Right.
And there's so many different situations that we put our young people in where that is considered secondary or even tertiary.
Yeah. Like why is not an important or how isn't important. It just is what. What score did you get? You know, if you get the A, no questions asked. Look at my scores.
Really like, it's not a great movie. There's a movie I really like. Either of you ever seen a movie called Renaissance Man starring Danny DeVito?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I've definitely seen that. Yep. Danny DeVito and Martin Lawrence.
It's okay. It's a movie where Danny DeVito gets a job teaching soldiers like in the army who I believe like didn't get their GED or something or have like some remedial thing to do. And he doesn't even know what to teach them. There isn't a curriculum. So he just needs to figure out what to do. And so what he ends up doing is kind of falling into, he decides to teach them Shakespeare and he teaches them Hamlet. We're going to find the entire curriculum working on Hamlet. And at first that seems like just kind of a weird thing to do. But when he realizes that what we're going to do is deep reading on a text, and we're going to use Hamlet to understand human nature. We're going to use Hamlet to understand how we communicate. We're going to use Hamlet to understand themes and like the way the world works. I'm oversimplifying it, but like, to just know the plot of Hamlet might get you a trivia question right, but to have actually close read the text is what you're actually going to get something out of it.
Right.
And I've seen that so many times where people just doing the book report. And I'm like, no, there's so much art and beauty in the world.
Right. And that's what I think the problem was here with Josh playing chess. Vinny wanted him to get I guess the heart and the art and the music and the poetry and everything you can get out of playing chess. And Bruce just wanted him to like just memorize strategies and figure out how to win. And I think that's one of the things he says too, was you're playing not to lose. You're not playing to win. So yeah. You're doing your strategy. So you're playing defense, but you're not playing, you know, yeah. Play the game. Try to beat me.
Connect to a person. And that's a big part of chess is to just, and it's the same thing with poker or any other kind of really in-depth sport or competition, is you have to understand what your opponent is likely to do. You have to understand what's in their head. This is why chess has such enduring qualities, because by studying chess, you can learn competition in any level and you can learn strategy on any level on anything. That doesn't have to be just chess. And I think Vinny is teaching something really beautiful here. And Bruce isn't wrong to teach Josh strategy, because everyone he's playing is going to know that stuff. He's not wrong to teach him that. He's wrong to be so single-minded about it. And no one in this movie, with the exception of Poe's teacher, whose name escapes me, is a monster. And even that guy thinks he's doing it.
Oh, God, he's awful.
Yeah, there's a whole bit where he comes in and he's got this other child chess prodigy. And he's just like, yes, I've taken him out of school completely. He learns nothing but chess. And Ben Kingsley says, well, I hope you're very proud of yourself. And he says, I am, because that's his value. And that's what he's instilling upon this child. And that child is very good at chess. Is also an incomplete person. And there's a big thing people have pointed out about the final chess match in this movie, which is just stunning, which is that it's a flawed chess match. There's no guaranteed win for Josh, even when Ben Kingsley says it's there, it's 12 moves, it's 20 moves away, but it's there, you've got him. It relies on knowing your opponent. Some people have just said, yeah, that Poe could have gotten out of that in 100 different ways. True, but Poe wouldn't have, because Poe is only about the win. He's being very aggressive.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Josh is actually learning not just the moves, not just how to think 20 moves ahead, but also how to read the person that he's playing. Mm-hmm. And he knows them well enough. And then when he realizes he doesn't need to finish the game, he knows he won. He's got that. He got what he needed. He doesn't need a trophy. And he says, I'm offering you a draw. And the kid has no idea what that is.
No, he's right, never
heard. Which was surprising. I figured that's something you would have learned in chess school.
Yeah, no.
Winning is the only objective. You don't learn how to tie.
You don't learn that anything but winning can be a good play. Mm-hmm. And that's not how life works. And it could be how chess worked if you wanted it to, but you couldn't do that. And so even though the actual chess game, some have argued, is flawed, it's not about the perfect chess game. It's about character flaw. Mm-hmm. And so Josh is able to actually have a somewhat complete sense of self, because he was finally able to get the people trying to manipulate him into being who they wanted him to be, to agree to let him be the way he wanted to be. And here's this other guy who just has this one insidious, got blinders on to the world. And he's sad. And even like when he walks away dejected, you realize that kid has nothing. It's really sad.
Yeah. Well, because right before that too is where we finally, you know, dad kind of comes around. They have the moment in his room where he realizes that he took all the trophies down, and he has the really beautiful moment with Bruce in the hotel room where they hug and they make up and he gives him the certificate. And, you know, he finally gets that support, which was really all he needed was some confidence, because Poe scared him. That's what shook him. Mm-hmm. And he just needed the adult in his life, his trusted adults, to just be a support system for him. He knows he knows how to play chess. You know, that's the one thing I think he had confidence in, was that he knows how to play chess. But he already had it from Vinny, but he needed it from the other two. And he had it from his mom. And the only thing I think I wish I would have got a little bit more from this movie is kind of what Chris Evans went through in Gifted, where he really had that internal struggle of, do I push my niece or do I not push my niece into being this prodigy?
I actually didn't see that.
Oh, you've never seen Gifted?
No.
I have seen every Chris Evans movie, but Chris Evans, his sister, she dies and he gets custody of her daughter. And her daughter is a math prodigy, just like her mother was. But her mother was basically like driven to madness trying to, you know, get this proof and become a great mathematician. So he was like, I already watched my sister go through this. Do I do this to my niece? Because she has the potential to do it, but I don't want to, I feel like my sister's life got ruined. And then he's in this battle with his mom, who wants to push and he wants to pull. And I feel like I wish I would have got a little bit more of that struggle with the dad, and even maybe more of the mom, if they just butted heads a little bit more of like, there has to be, you have to give somewhere. You can't ruin this kid's life like this.
I feel like they have those scenes, and yeah, maybe there could be more of them, but I do feel like Joan Allen in this movie sometimes gets a little overlooked, and I think she's doing a lot with very little.
Yeah.
God, can we just, the cast in this movie is so damn good.
Yes.
everyone in this movie is completely on fire. Like, I just can never get over just how, like, impeccable every single bit of casting in this movie is. Like,
yeah,
even just little moments which could have been really corny, when, like, there's this bit where Josh does the thing where he pulls out his queen too early and everyone's like, oh, here we go, he's screwed. And then Vinny's just like, I plan to do that, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then when Josh finally, you find out that actually was a strategy, he's like, there it is.
Yeah.
you get goosebumps.
Yeah, the whole final scene is I mean, like, it's one of those, you know, with the epic sports movies, you know, when you're watching Miracle and you're like, USA is gonna win, and you're like, everybody's like, Miracle is the best sports movie ever, and USA, and you feel all this pride. And I'm
Miracle, like, people say that, have I missed the I'm not, that's not a critique. I just,
maybe
I,
like two people, but I don't know.
I find this is interesting. I find, like, because I don't think we're quite the same generation, right? Are we?
Yeah, we're like a generation probably separated.
You're a little younger than I am. So, like, but like, these sort of things about what is the best blank movie ever, these things change over time, and like, newer movies become a little bit more popular, or older movies get rediscovered or reevaluated, and we realize, oh, Gone with the Wind is actually deeply problematic. Maybe we can stop talking about that one so much, that kind of thing. And so it's no longer considered one of the great movie romances by most people that I know.
Correct.
So, like, but these things happen naturally, and sometimes they just over time, and sometimes with good cause. Sometimes they're just better movies out there. But, you know, if you were asking me, like, what's the greatest sports movie, I'd probably still say Rocky. But if it's a Miracle now, I'd be curious to know.
Oh, I appreciate that. You know? I have the definitive answer.
I don't know everything, and I definitely don't have my finger on the pulse of generations to come. And it's really important. This is something I think a lot of film critics are a little too hesitant about, to listen and remember that just because you grew up with this as a standard of quality doesn't mean the next generation is. It doesn't mean it's going to connect with them at all. I'm seeing a lot of people talk about how, like, my generation grew up with the original Ghostbusters, for example, and it was this unassailable classic, and I still think it's a very, very good movie. And I'm seeing a lot of younger people, people in their teens and 20s, talking about how Ghostbusters is not that great. That's a perfectly valid opinion. It doesn't have to have that same weight. Sometimes movies are enormously popular when they come out, and then gradually lose favor over time, to the point where nowadays most people haven't heard of some of the most popular movies of the 1940s, you know, or the most popular movies of the 1960s. Ghostbusters is old now. Ghostbusters is nearly 30 years old.
Yeah.
That's, wait, 30? No, 40.
Yeah,
it's well past 40. 30.
Oh my god,
87.
Old. Mm-hmm. That movie is so old. You know what else is old? Star Wars. It's so old.
It's getting older.
I think I did the math on this. You know how Star Wars was inspired by, like, the black and white 1930s Flash Gordon serials?
Yep.
Star Wars is as old now, if not older, than Flash Gordon was when Star Wars came out.
Yeah, I was born in 1989, and, you know, in like the 90s, thinking about 40 years prior, that's 1955.
Yeah. Like, we don't let things fall into, like, classic, like, oh, it's a classic movie. Like, not to disregard it, but like, we want to keep our things alive for so long that sometimes we don't realize that other people are less interested in it than we are.
Well, and the interesting thing through this whole experience with Christina of going through the different, we've seen movies from the 30s to, you know, current times. And I mean, our favorite movies of the year was Girl Shy, Harold Lloyd's Girl Shy, silent film. And we just loved it. And we were shocked by how, you know, it was a quintessential rom-com in so many ways, but it was so still modern with its themes, I guess you could say, where it was just like, I could, and it's just like so often, I mean, Sunset Boulevard, I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, man, I didn't know the 50s movies could be this dark right away. It's like, I thought there was like this like kind of code where it was like, yeah, it's like, kind, you know, and like, that
we definitely Leave It to Beaver.
And it's just like, now, you know, Christina will say like, it's hard for her to watch new movies because of how much the older like movies that are truly classics kind of hold up. And it's just like, it's hard for me to watch like newer movies. These are still great. If it's from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, or today.
Are out of touch, it's because we watch so many movies, our standards are raised.
Right.
That's it. That's all there is to it. Our standards get raised because we watch a lot of them. Some people only watch, quite a few people only watch, I don't know, a couple of dozen movies a year. It's not uncommon.
Right.
you don't get tired of things and you don't expect movies to hold up to the best possible standards. But when you realize how many truly amazing movies there are now and have been in the past and how easy it is, how incredibly easy it is to access truly brilliant films, that just the mediocre stuff that just chances upon us now, it's just sort of like, I mean, yeah, it's okay, I guess, but like,
this is here also.
We know we can do better. We know that there is more exciting cinema out there, and we know that there are classic films that really hold up, and sometimes they're the ones that completely surprise us. Like, you know, you've heard about all the famous ones, but like, we do a podcast on Critically Acclaimed's Patreon where we're reviewing every single film ever nominated for Best Picture, and you know, every year there's like a couple of really, really famous ones, but even just, even if you only focus on that, you're going to run into a few just random movies you've barely heard of or never heard of before, and you're like, oh my god, this movie is amazing, why does no one ever talk about The Little Foxes or 100 Men and a Girl? And like, these movies are incredible. Five Star Final is this movie about journalism that, aside from the fact that they're working at a print newspaper, everything is relevant today. Every single conversation that they're having about how the media is only after clickbait headlines and they don't care who they destroy as long as they sell papers or they get the clicks, it's all there.
I know it's not super interesting when the hostess gloats about why they like their guests, but just one more thing to add to it that kind of relates to this movie is that you take the kind of the Vinny and the Bruce approaches with regards to your criticism. It's why often you like movies that you're not supposed to like. And so often people think you're just trying to be shocking with those opinions. Chico, thank you for backing me up. Chico's a huge fan of Critically Acclaimed.
Thank you, Chico.
Yeah, I'll definitely make sure to up his Patreonage so he can listen to those very soon. But one of the things I really do appreciate is that you have the foundational elements of like film criticism that are important for critics to have. But you also, it's like you're taking your own experience into it and it's being a part of the critique. And I think that's what it makes your views just so relatable while also being like educational and learning a lot through them. And so that kind of relates to this movie and how Josh ends up playing his chess. It's like if he played like everybody else, he wouldn't be Josh. And that's just, you know, it, and if he just played like Vinny, it's a balance, like kind of what we've been talking about this whole time. It's like you do need kind of both here. You need to have some sort of a, you know, a foundation, but also it's got to be how you do it.
Well, I don't take compliments well, but I will just say thank you. That's very, very kind.
Yeah. No,
it means a lot to me. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I appreciate being able to say it. So it means a lot to me to be able to say it. Christina, what else do we need to cover? I mean, this has been an incredible conversation.
Yeah, now that I am just like the go-to person to declare the greatest sports movie of all time, I'm going to say that the ending scene of Searching for Bobby Fischer is right up there with any of the greatest sports movies ever, that this may be the greatest sports movie of all time now. You didn't know. You didn't know if he was going to win.
And the movie would end okay if he did.
Right, because you had the turning point of the support of his teacher, of his parents. We finally had that. Like, as a viewer, I knew, I felt, okay, I know that Josh is going to be okay if he loses because his dad definitely still loves him. And Bruce is still going to teach him and everything's going to be okay. And so you felt okay, but it was just shot beautifully. I love when you see him like go through his inner monologue.
James Horner's score. Like, yeah. I mean, good. Like, it is just like, it really is like, I'm watching it by myself and like trying to hold back from applauding at the end of the movie, which I hate when people do. I will make that clear.
It's a nightmare. I'm bad about it.
But like, it's like, I mean, it is like, yeah, that score, it just did what a score should do, is moving while not being manipulative, which is such a fine line. And just, yeah, I love the score, the subtleties of the score. Again, my favorite scene was the Vinny chess scene with Josh. And the score at that point is just like almost like freeform jazz all of a sudden from this like traditional kind of like.
And then almost it falls into this incredible theme, like this. Yeah. Great, yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite bit in the score too.
I mean, I'm
glad to connect it with you too, because that's my favorite bit.
Yeah, and I'm just like, you know, you're getting great shots of Lawrence Fishburne throughout. I'm just like
skinny, you know, Lawrence Fishburne.
Very skinny. Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, I loved it. And it was just, again, not what I was expecting when I walked by Searching for Bobby Fischer in the video store for all those years as a kid and didn't pick it up. I always saw it on the shelf when I went to Hollywood Video or Blockbuster. I was just like, that movie looks boring. I'm not going to watch this movie with this kid looking at his shoe. Like, I'm just like, what is this about?
It's not Bobby? The best poster. I'll give you that. It's not
Especially as a kid, I was just like, I was not jumping over Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Ooze to watch this.
Well, this is a movie that I didn't get to see this in theaters. This is a movie that used to be on like HBO like 8 times a month. And yeah. I would just have it on and then I'd watch it. And again, I'm like 10 or 11 when this movie comes out. And I'm just, and I'd already been watching like, you know, classic movies and stuff too. So it's not like this was beyond my taste. But regardless, it's just a movie that I, whenever it was on, I would not stop watching it. I couldn't flip the channel. There's no way. It's just too good.
It is. And it is just a great movie. There is no fat on this movie. Yeah, I'll say that.
You could study the hell out of this movie and you could learn a lot about screenwriting, editing, cinematography, score.
Pacing. Like the pacing is perfect too.
It's the perfect storm of a movie. And yeah, I think it's something that it's just one of those movies that I think slipped through the cracks. It got a couple of Oscar nominations. I think only best cinematography, actually, now I think about it.
Which is amazing with how many opportunities there were for Oscar noms with this movie. Yeah. The score at minimum.
It just got kind of glossed over and it's just never got a Criterion release. It never quite got that like extra bump like it needed from.
I gotta say, I'm shocked with the Queen's Gambit like hype that happened a few months ago, how this did not kind of just be like, if you like Queen's Gambit, here is, I mean, I don't mean to oversimplify it here, really did remind me of Queen's Gambit, which obviously this came out much prior.
It's
to
a
Queen's
great
Gambit.
Opportunity to new the popularity of new things is a great opportunity for anyone who loves film to help people jump on board to old stuff. The new stuff can just sort of contextualize the old stuff you might have missed. And yeah, that would have been a perfect opportunity here. Didn't quite come together. Sometimes these things like fall by the wayside. Like I remember when Netflix did the remake of Rebecca, and then you couldn't find the original anywhere. They like removed it so that the new one would be the only one you'd find so they'd make more money. Mm-hmm. And that was some bullshit.
Yeah.
That was just, you're like, no, like this should like make you excited to see the original. Like that's the whole point, isn't it?
I guarantee Ben Wheatley did not direct that hoping, I hope to replace Alfred Hitchcock's original. Like I guarantee it was like, I hope this opens up. Like it's not the intention of the film, but it's, you know, the money that comes into it.
I think Ben Wheatley really dropped the ball on that remake, actually.
Oh, me too. I'm not defending the Rebecca remake.
I couldn't even dream to know what he was thinking. But no, he's a smart guy. I'm sure he had no intention of replacing Rebecca in the popular consciousness. I just wish he had some sort of take on it that justified remaking it.
Right.
You know, but, well, anyway.
That's for a whole nother. But yeah,
you want to do Rebecca someday, I'd be happy to. But
yeah, we can
do it. Movies is one word titles.
We will be doing the 1940s Rebecca if we do the one more title. I'm just gonna put my foot down on that right now. Yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah, this has been an incredible conversation. And what I always love about each week is that the conversation does kind of form and represent the movie in a way. And I think this absolutely did with this conversation. Is there anything we want to kind of cover before we get to our ratings, Christina?
I think I said everything I need to say.
Yeah, William, anything before we get to our closing thoughts and ratings?
Again, this is my favorite movie for all the reasons stated. And if anyone hasn't seen it, you know, it's slightly spoiled, but I don't think you have the full experience. So I do hope you check it out.
Yeah, and it's on Amazon Prime, everybody. So, I mean, it is fully available right now. So we're going to go into our ratings, our closing thoughts here. I'm going to save our guests for last. So definitely want to hear, you know, you go all out on kind of your closing thoughts here. And thank you so much for joining us today, William. And just, it's been a pleasure and just, and you know, to digest this cinema with you. So I will go first here so I can stop talking and dry off my palms from the last hour and 15 minutes. This has been amazing. Yeah, that was great wording by me. You know, well, I'm post-pubescent. Anyways, my rating and final thoughts. I am someone who often gets very oversensitive towards what I call saccharine kind of filmmaking or kind of emotionally manipulative or trying to kind of tell me how to feel. And that was one of kind of my fears when, before I knew anything about this movie, I was just like, oh, is this kind of just one of those, you know, early 90s kind of movies where it's, I'm going to feel. Anyways, it was not at all that. I was shocked by how complex the characters were in this movie. And I knew nothing about Bobby Fischer or really anybody, obviously Josh Watson. Before this movie, but I just loved learning about all the characters. I just had a pleasant time throughout this movie, and it wasn't, you know, often I kind of go towards movies with a little bleaker of an ending, so it's not, you know, sometimes I kind of, it gets lost on me when a movie has such a hopeful, endearing kind of ending. But this just kind of worked for me all the way through. We've said with all the characters, I was shocked this was by the director of the Night Of series on HBO, Steve Zaillian, because this is quite a different tone from that. Also really great, by the way. But yeah, I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5 stars. I think that this movie doesn't have anything I disliked about it, and honestly is one that over rewatches, I can definitely see increasing in my kind of allure. I always avoid the kind of temptation to allow the discussion to up my rating here, because obviously this is an incredible discussion that has made me enjoy this movie more post-view. But based on my first view of the movie, it's a 4 out of 5. Super solid. I thought that all of the characters were pretty great. I too kind of just wanted a little more Vinny. I just wanted more Vinny. I'm talking for myself here. I wanted more Vinny. I just loved Vinny, and I know the movie kind of takes a different turn if we get more of his backstory, and maybe less is more here, but other than a few other things like that, honestly, I just think this is a really solid movie I'd recommend to anybody. Yeah, it was a pleasure to talk about. So, Christina, over to you.
Yeah, this was a tough category because how are we supposed to find a movie, a biopic about someone we've never heard of unless we've heard of them? So we were definitely going into this super blind and just kind of trusting people to give us our recommendations. And yeah, when I first read it, I was like, cool, we're going to, you know, this is probably about somebody named Bobby Fischer. We got to find him and whatever it is. And even the beginning narration and, you know, we find out he disappeared. I'm like, oh shit, like this will be a mystery movie with chess. Like, sign me up. And then it turns out to be this like super just endearing emotional story. And I always find that I tend to enjoy movies more when I can connect with them in some way. And so just having the teacher relationship, the mentor relationship, even just, you know, watching the parent relationship of like, you know, if I was a mom, this is not how I would have handled this. Or, you know, I would hope that my husband who would be the dad would not, you know, handle it this way. And you kind of just, you think about how you would handle these type of situations, because this was a real life situation movie. You know, nothing crazy happened. Nothing was world ending. Everything that happened in this movie can happen in your everyday life. I just found all the characters super relatable. I thought the acting performances were exceptional. I thought Max that played Josh was great for being, you know, so young, that I just really felt like his vulnerability. I felt his fear. I felt his confidence. I felt his kindness. And I just loved different parts about this movie, just the way it was shot. Like when he won his first chess tournament, they didn't really tell you until he's just sleeping on the train and you see his trophy. And it was just like, just the subtleties and the way they filmed it. I really enjoyed this. I watched it twice, which is, I don't really watch the movies more than once before we talk about them, but I really, really liked this one before we watched it. So I'm going to give this 4.5 stars because I really liked it. I really wish I was better at chess, honestly. So I'm just going to throw that in at the end.
Sam's.
Yeah, me too. I also wish I was better at chess. Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Okay. Yeah, no surprises. It's my favorite movie. I'm going to give this a 5 out of 5. I don't believe in throwing 5 out of 5s out lightly, if that's the scale we're using, because that's a really high standard. But again, I don't think there's anything this movie does wrong. And even some of the critiques I'm hearing from you, which are very reasonable, is mostly you just wish there was more of it. That's the worst problem with the movie. That's pretty good. I think this movie is incredibly potent. I think this movie is so just deliciously told that even though it's a story about a little kid who's good at chess and he's worried his dad doesn't love him, it feels as gigantic as any Hollywood blockbuster when it hits its big emotional crescendos. Mm-hmm. And that's a mark of great filmmaking. I really do think so. I love this movie to pieces. It's my favorite movie for a reason. And thanks again for giving me an opportunity to talk about it.
Thank you for suggesting that to us.
Yeah, really. I mean, that was our goal with all of our guests from the beginning, is if they came on, it was a movie they absolutely loved. And if we could talk about, I don't think we got to talk to anybody about their absolute favorite movie this year. Maybe some of the Star Wars discussions, there might have been a couple of those. But so seriously, we really sincerely appreciate you coming on and just pouring your heart into this episode. This it really does mean a lot to us. So, and this is a movie I would not have watched if it was not for you. So it was just, would have been those, one of those movies that continued to kind of just go through the ether and just kind of pass through. And it's definitely one I'll be passing on to many people as I go on, you know. And it's one of my favorite parts about when you see a movie that is like a kind of hidden classic, it feels like a discovery that you get to share with all the people you love. So I'm super excited to share this with people and talk about this for many years to come. So that's like a gift. Can't really put a price on, William. So thank you for that. And thank you for joining us today. Anything that you'd like to plug before we kind of talk about it next week. I just want to give you that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, sure. We've talked about it here, but we have a series of podcasts, me and my co-host Whitney Seibold. It's called The Critically Acclaimed Network. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find podcasts. And we have a lot of shows on there for free on the main feed. We review new movies on Critically Acclaimed. We answer reader emails on We've Got Mail. We watch older movies on Patreon. Older movies on streaming services that are chosen by our patrons at Patreon. On our show Critically Reclaimed, we review TV shows that lasted only one season or less and canceled too soon. And over at patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork, we have a lot of other bonus podcasts. We're working our way through every single episode of Star Trek ever. Got through the original series, the animated series, and the first four movies, and we're most of the way done with the first season of Next Generation. We're doing every single episode of the 1960s Batman. We're doing that show I mentioned before. We're reviewing every single nominee for Best Picture in order. We do commentary tracks. We do a whole bunch over there. So head on over. You get to vote for episodes of things, and there's other cool stuff too. So then, of course, I have a soap store with my partner, M. Lapis da Silva. It's called Salt Cat Soap, and it's all one word. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and you can find us on Etsy, and we have a lot of very nice, very handcrafted soaps from a variety of different styles and aromas. We have lotions and bath salts as well. We sell stickers of our logo. We have glow-in-the-dark ghosts. We have holiday soaps that smell like a gingerbread latte. We have a lot of cool stuff over there. So thank you. I should have thought ahead. I don't have any samples right next to me.
It's okay. This is all audio anyways, so don't worry about it.
Well, in case, thank you everybody for who's already tried it out, and if you haven't, check us out. It's all cat soap. We like soap, and we hope you do too.
I love it, William. A man of many talents and puts his heart into all of them. Seriously, thank you so much. Christina, next week we've got, I mean, all of our guests are special, and we've got another special one coming up next week. You want to tell us a little bit about what's coming up for our one word title?
Yeah, I'm a little biased, but our guest next week, in my opinion, should be the Inner Geekdom champion of the world, but he is not. But in my eyes, he is, because he is my friend, and he is one quarter of the Fan League Four, the best one of the Fan League Four so far, since I've grossly disappointed all of us. But next week, our theme is one word title. And when we wanted to start this podcast, Rue messaged us and was like, "You're doing blind spotting." So we have waited an entire year, and we have not watched Blind Spotting yet, because we knew that Rue wanted to watch this and talk to us about it. So we had to wait all the way until almost the end of the podcast to watch it. So Amaru Moses will be on our podcast next week talking about his favorite movie of all time. One word title, Blind Spotting.
I can't wait. Former member of the Fan League team, Undercover Brothers, with yours truly. Undercover Brothers never dies, Amaru. You know, we had that team title locked up. But either way, it's fine. It's fine. He's doing big things, and cannot wait to talk to him next week about Blind Spotting. Thank you so much to everybody who's listened to this very, very special episode of Digesting Cinema. For Aaron, for Christina, and for our guest, William Bibbiani of Salt Cat Soap, of Critically Acclaimed Network, and just all around great human being. Thank you all for joining us. Keep taking care of each other out there. And keep digesting how to play chess.